go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
Welcome back. We are joined, I'm very pleased to say, once again by another old and very valued friend and colleague. He is Stephen Groves, a senior research fellow at the Margaret Thatcher Center for Freedom of the Heritage Foundation. He has, in previous incarnations, served both at the state and federal level in our government, notably at, in the state of Florida as an assistant attorney general, and in the United States Senate on the Permanent Subcommittee on Investigations, where he was a senior counsel. Stephen Groves is one of the country's preeminent experts and great practitioners of public policy concerning international diplomacy and agreements, and it is always a treat to have him with us. Steve, welcome back. It's good to have you.
Great to be back, Frank. Thanks for having me.
Well, there are several things I'm anxious to talk with you about. Much mischief is afoot at the moment. You have been very focused and writing powerfully about what the president and his team are doing in Paris, or in the run-up, I should say, to Paris later this year with respect to climate change. Is it reasonable to expect that we'll see a kind of reprise of what was done on the Iran deal, namely just simply blowing past the Senate what should be a treaty and what should, for that matter, be rejected by the Senate as such?
Yeah, not just a reprise, but if you can believe it, this is really going to be kind of a greater overstep than the Iran deal was. At least with the Iran deal, you know, the majority of what happened would happen overseas. It would happen in Iran with the inspections and the reductions and all the things the Iranians have promised on a stack of Qurans that they're going to do. What makes this Paris Protocol, what is what we're calling it, even worse, is that he's going to go make all these international promises overseas in Paris to the rest of the world, and then he's going to come back here to the United States and enforce those promises through, you know, very onerous environmental regulations and bypass the Senate altogether. So there's going to be significant domestic impact on Americans, on how they consume energy and how they produce energy based on the president's international commitments, all without the Senate or the House having any say.
So you'll see neither the treaty-making process used to get ratification of the treaty. You'll see the Congress sidestepped even further with respect to the kind of implementing legislation that, as you say, Stephen Groves, could be extraordinarily not just onerous but expensive as well. Is there any sign of life from the United States Congress that this sort of overstepping is not going to be tolerated on this agreement, even though they did effectively rubber stamp or at least took a dive on the most recent unpleasantness with respect to Iran in this regard?
In a word, no. And it's extremely, extremely disheartening. At a minimum, someone like Senator Bob Corker from Tennessee should hold a hearing at Senate Foreign Relations Committee and call, you know, the key negotiators from the administration and say, hey, what is exactly are you guys planning on doing in Paris? And why, from your press statements, is it crystal clear that you have no intention of giving Senate any type of review on this agreement? That's what the Senate, at a bare minimum, should be doing. But what they did instead is Senator Barrasso, who chairs a subcommittee under the Foreign Relations Committee, held a hearing on Tuesday where he and he alone from the Republican side of the aisle showed up and tried to put up a good fight, but he was one man, whereas five Democrats showed up on the other side. And this was the one crack at questioning Todd Stern, who is the president's number one climate change negotiator on the agreements. So I see no sign from either the Senate or the House that they even know what's going on, much less they're prepared to do anything about it.
And you served with distinction in the Senate on the staff of a subcommittee with which I had worked a long time ago, as a matter of fact, myself. And I can't imagine what the framers would think of the Senate going along with this extraordinary reduction in its responsibilities and authority. And Steve, I guess the question occurs, will there be any limit going forward to what this president or perhaps future presidents might do, having effectively eviscerated this constitutional check and balance, whereby the framers said to the executive, you will have a quality control mechanism by having to get 2/3 of the Senate to go along with whatever international agreements you fashion?
I see no reason why future presidents, and particularly liberal Democrat future presidents, should we be so blessed to have it, would not follow Obama's precedent here. I mean, after all, why bother going through the messy advice and consent process that the framers put into the Constitution, where you have to get, a supermajority of the Senate to agree to an international agreement, when you can just agree to the agreement over in Paris or Geneva or wherever these things get negotiated, and then come back and unilaterally enforce them by executive diktat? I mean, why not, when you've got the Comprehensive Test Ban Treaty that we know we can't get through the Senate, already failed in the Senate once, why not just enforce it through executive orders and regulations? How about human rights treaties? Can't get those through the Senate either because people are concerned about sovereignty and being governed from Geneva. Why not just have new regs on those as well and rule from the White House the way that George III used to rule from the throne in London?
You know, you mentioned the Comprehensive Test Ban Treaty, or CTBT, Stephen Groves, and it is, of course, something that has just reared its ugly head again. The president's top diplomat, John Kerry, announcing earlier this week that he is determined to try to get this treaty through the Senate as a treaty. And certainly it failed miserably back in 99, I think, or 2000, a long time ago. But they're going to take another run at it, I guess, through the treaty-making process. But we'll see. I look forward to working with you in opposition to that. But before we run out of time, let me ask you quickly about one other treaty that you have been extraordinarily effective in opposing for a lot of reasons, and that is the Law of the Sea Treaty. When you see a member state like China engaging in the kind of behavior it is at the moment in the South China Sea, utterly in violation of the Law of the Sea Treaty, do you think that that will be the end of this idea that we too should become party to it?
Time will tell. You and I and our allies were so effective in killing this treaty back in 2012 that the idea that it would be brought up in the Senate anytime soon would be very surprising. But we also thought that CTBT was dead. These are the zombie treaties that you and I always talk about. You know, as many times as you kill them, they tend to come back. But, I mean, you and I have advocated against this treaty for so long. And one of the reasons that we bring up is, hey, the countries that count and many other countries around the world, they don't even follow the treaty that they are a party to. Why do we want to join a treaty where we don't have reliable treaty partners who flout the black letter law of the treaty? And that's what we're seeing in the South China Sea with China and ignoring the lawsuit that the Philippines brought against it under the treaty, validly under the treaty, through their reclamation of rocks in the South China Sea and starting to call them islands and then saber-rattling about it.
And declaring keep-out zones and then the question of whether we will exercise freedom of navigation operations and possibly come into conflict with the Chinese. An extraordinarily important strategic development. And Steve Groves, I'm so grateful to you for all of your efforts to help expose the rest of us to what's at stake with these international accords, and particularly the possibility that they will be imposed upon us outside of the regular order, as they say. Keep up the good work, my friend, that you do at the Margaret Thatcher Center for Freedom at the Heritage Foundation, and come back to us again very soon. Next up, Tariq Fatah will join us from Canada, talking about the victory, perhaps for Islam.
Go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.